All right, so my wife calls this contemporary issues class. So, subject we have tonight, actually Chuck suggested, so it's something I hadn't heard about, so I tried to do a little research. It was actually really hard to find actually good stuff. So I hope tonight is good. I have a couple videos. I think you'll be blessed by them. I think it's an interesting topic anyways. So we'll start off with this question. Why does patriotism scare the left? You could say it doesn't, but I would totally disagree with you. I think it really does. But why are people scared of patriotism?
Individuality. They want to control.
Okay. So individuality, control. All
right.
Okay, right. There's kind of a unity that, for sure, right, that's there, that's centered around our nation, right, and kind of the thought of being America. And there's been a huge movement towards being un-America, right? And there's been a huge pull towards tearing America down, getting rid of morality and all that, and destroying our society, to bring in a one-world government, right? That's the whole point, is to get to that point of where we are incorporated into a one world. So a rise of nationalism, right? A rise of patriotism, kind of is not helpful, right? It's not real helpful. And so certainly I think we saw that when Trump was elected. There was a huge rise in patriotism. And we saw a huge, people that were very scared of that and still are scared of that. And so there's kind of been a reaction to that. So which brings us to the next question. What is a straw man argument?
I'm going to assume something that's pretty weak.
So, no, actually it's not. It's a very, people use it all the time. Yeah. It's a way of arguing with somebody without actually having to actually deal with the issues. What?
To scare the crows away?
No, it's not to scare the crows away. What's that?
I'm trying to remember.
You're trying to remember all the different argument strategies and all that. Yeah. Anybody?
Is it like fluff?
It's not fluff. It's not fluff at all.
Cover up.
Kind of like a cover up. Kind of. Okay, here, I'll get the definition for you, so you don't just strain your minds too hard. I'm starting to smell smoke. Okay, so here's our definition. You misrepresented someone's argument to make it easier to attack. By exaggerating, misrepresenting, or just completely fabricating someone's argument, it's much easier to present your own position as being reasonable, but this kind of dishonesty serves to undermine honest, rational debate. So the straw man is you set up a false argument, really, is what you're doing. Is you're putting up you're claiming, oh, you believe this, and then attacking that. Instead of actually dealing with the real issue, with the real question, you invent a different one and you attack that one. If you notice, it gets used all the time, especially in the media, especially if there's some kind of issue. They don't actually address the issue. They will invent something and then attack that and claim these people believe this. And so then they argue that instead of actually arguing the real issue. So I have an example here that probably will help you understand maybe a little bit better. Says, for example, if someone says, I think that we should give better study guides to students, A person using a straw man might reply by saying, I think that your idea is bad because we shouldn't just give out easy A's to everyone. Right? That's a straw man argument. And it's always like, it always leaves you like, right? It's like, stop, that's not what I said, that's not what I mean. But it puts you on the defensive like right away, it puts you on the defensive. And so it is kind of hard to combat that, and then really goes back to making sure we define what we're arguing about and what we're talking about, and recognizing what's going on and recognizing what someone's doing. So we're going to talk about something that I guess it's about 3 or 4 years in the making or so. But I hadn't heard of it until Chuck said something. So, but I don't watch the news. I don't watch any of the mainstream anything at all, as much as possible. I try to avoid it. And so there is this thing called white Christian nationalism. And so I was like, what in the world is that? So I tried to find something that would tell me. And no one really tells you what it is. They won't tell you what it is. It's just a term that's being applied to a certain group of people that are hated. And so the people saying this, I started looking at all the people that are talking about this, and it's all the mainstream liberal media, all of it. I mean, it's crazy. And so I'm like, what really is this? And so when I started listening to what they had to say, it's a broad spectrum. A broad spectrum that people are being painted with this thought. And so as you can kind of think, it's kind of this thought of nationalism or patriotism, and then labeling it with Christian and then adding white, because that just makes it even better, right? That just makes it, they're racist as well as being, they're a bunch of racists. And they're Christians, that makes it even better. So the only people I've heard actually use this term is the liberal media. That's the only people I've heard. Maybe there are people that have taken this term. I know there's people that have taken this term, and we'll talk about it a little bit later, but have actually kind of accepted and embraced it and said, okay, fine, if you want to define me that way, then I'm going to take this and run with it. But as far as I can tell, here this term is being applied to anyone who opposes critical race theory. So if you oppose critical race theory, CRT, you are branded a white, nationalist, white Christian nationalist. If you support any kind of moral values or absolutes, if you oppose abortion, if you oppose open borders, if you oppose voting rights for illegal immigrants, right, and then on down the line, and they try to bring everybody, white supremacists into this, and a whole bunch of other people into this, and they just brand everyone with the same label, really to try to silence them, to try to make them seem that nobody should listen to you, right? This is who you are. You oppose this? Okay, fine. You're just a white Christian nationalist. So that's, as far as I could tell, that's a lot of the way that this term is being used. Now, certainly there are those, I think, that have accepted this branding and run with it. And they're like, fine, I am a patriot, and I do believe, in our nation. I do believe in moral values and that. So, maybe I'm off base, but to me, a lot of it is a straw man argument, right? They're creating this persona of these people who are labeled as really, really terrible people, as a threat. They're a threat to national security. You'll see that used a lot. They're a threat to national security. They're a threat to all of this. And they're all being, everyone is being labeled and put into this group. Really, I believe to be silenced and disregarded and thought that's the way they want to think of it. So I have a couple videos. Here's the first one. So this guy has some interesting things to say. Honestly, I agree with most of what he has to say, but kind of keep track of where it goes with this. Because it's, to me, it's kind of sneaky, but interesting. So, let me turn my sound off.
Today I want to talk to you about Christian nationalism. Now, you may never have heard of that phrase before, or you may have. But it's a pretty new term, and I want to explain it by means of a narrative. I want to tell you two stories. And I want to ask you to think with me about which one is true. When I say true, I mean what actually corresponds to the facts. What actually is accurate in terms of reality. Now, both of these stories I'm going to tell you are about the country that I love. If you're an American, you love this country as well. So, here we go. Story number one. In story number one, America is, and always has been, a Christian nation. We know this because the founders were devoted Christians. Therefore, God has uniquely favored America. Why would God not favor a country that began on Christian roots and actually was Christian? In this nation, a government has a purpose, and it is to pass laws that benefit, of course, all people, but especially Christians and churches. And in this first story, the church also has one. It is to remind America that it's Christian and return to its Christian roots. All right, story two. America is and always has been a religiously neutral nation. We know this because the founders are a mixed bag in terms of their religious conviction. There were some devoted Christians. You no doubt have heard of the Puritans and the Pilgrims that came to our country back in the early 1600s. But remember, not all people that came and settled our country from England were Puritans and Pilgrims, and some of those who were devoted Christians, and some of those just simply were religious in name only. So there were some devoted Christians. There were also some religious people. And when I think of religious people, I think of someone like one of my favorite national heroes, George Washington. If you read much about George Washington's life or read much of his writings, you find out that while he talked about God from time to time and the benevolent providence, he seldom talked about Jesus. Maybe almost none. That gets very specific. That gets right down to Christianity and the particularity of Christ. But instead, he talked about this generic God. I think he was a gracious religious deist. But also there were people who helped found our country who were out-and-out humans. Ben Franklin made no bones about it. He was not a follower of Christ. He didn't believe in Christianity. But he believed in the generic God. He was probably a deist as well. Thomas Jefferson was the same way. Now, I'm a big fan of Thomas Jefferson, too. The American Phoenix is what one biographer calls him. Jefferson, his genius is on display at Monticello. Having grown up in Virginia, I went to Monticello in 4th grade, 7th grade, and 12th grade. And if you've never been, I hope you go. My wife and I were up in Virginia about 5 years ago to see family and friends, and we went there one more time. And I just say to you, his genius is on display. I'm glad he's a family father. I'm glad he penned the Declaration of Independence. But he was not a fan of miracles or the supernatural, or what we would call the heart of Christianity, Jesus being the Son of God. And so actually, he took his scissors to his New Testament and cut out everything in the Gospels that had to do with miracles. Google sometimes the Thomas Jefferson New Testament, look it up, because it is on display in the Smithsonian. So our country actually, in story two, has a mixed bag on the founding fathers. God, in this view, has blessed America richly. Who could deny it? But he also longs to bless all nations. In this view, the government's purpose is to pass laws that benefit not specifically Christians, but simply the common good. And finally, the purpose of the church is to influence Americans by speaking the truth and living in love. Now, I said Americans for a specific reason as opposed to America. And that's because now I want to talk to you about a particular understanding of America versus Americans. Before I do that, let me just say that that first story, that's Christian nationalism. It's a popular story. I grew up with it. Maybe you or your parents or grandparents did. It's an attractive story. I mean, there are times I really want that to be true, and most likely some of you really want it to be true as well. But it's just not. It does not line up with the facts. It doesn't reflect reality as historians have discovered. Every reputable historian I've ever read, I've got 2 degrees in history, including an advanced degree, that has a PhD after it in the area of history. All those historians indicate that story one is not true. It does not comport with facts. Story two is. So here's my assumption. It goes back to that statement about the purpose of the church to influence Americans. My assumption is that a nation cannot be Christian. Only person's convictions. And I think you can argue this just by using common sense with everything else that's kind of along the lines of the nation, although on a smaller level, right? Let's argue from the lesser to the greater. A business cannot be Christian, although the workers might be, managers might be, the board may be. A university cannot be Christian, although students may be, professors may be, administrators may be. A sports team cannot be Christian, although players may be, coaches may be, owners may be. So arguing from the lesser to the greater, a nation cannot be Christian, although its citizens may be or may not, and government leaders may be or may not. So if you think that America's a Christian nation, I implore you to think differently, because I think only persons can be Christians. And if you've never thought America's a Christian nation, then you've got one Christian here who's thought about this a lot, telling you that I agree with you. Second, I want you to challenge. I want to challenge you to speak and write only what you can verify is true. And by that, I mean stop creating or liking or sharing posts on social media that you can't verify is accurate. And we're in a crazy social media world, aren't we? I get so many things, and I have to evaluate quickly, is it true or not? Am I going to believe it? Am I going to pass it on? And what I'm saying is, when you receive something, and you're not sure that it's true, don't pass it on. I actually think that if you and I did that, I mean, we would just end fake news forever. So, I know that some of you may like what I said, and you're thankful. You're thinking, man, I'm glad to hear somebody say that. Or I've heard it before, and I'm going to go Google some more things on this. Check it out on YouTube and search it other places for Christian nationalists. Some of you may hate what I've said. Hope you don't hate me, but you can if you want. And you think I'm absolutely crazy. And some of you just aren't sure. This is new to you, you're processing, and you just want to think of it. Well, wherever you are, I hope you will weigh intellectually what I've said. Again, thank you for watching. If you like this video, be sure to give it a thumbs up. More content like this, make sure that you click subscribe button below and you'll be notified when more videos come out. And in the meantime, I hope that you'll. Today I want to talk to you about Christian.
Alright, so as we were looking at that guy, and I agree with a lot of things he said, right? I mean, especially at the end there, verifying, right? Be careful what you pass on. There's a lot of junk out there. But what are some of the things you noticed? Like, how did you define Christian nationalism? He didn't really define it, did he? He claimed it was people who believe we're a Christian nation and we should return to that. But some of the things he said are like, okay, I mean, I have made the statement we were one time a Christian nation, and maybe that's confusing to some people, but I always try to clarify what I mean by that, in that we as a nation at one time, especially at our founding, believed in a God and believed in the morality of Scripture, right? And based our whole government along biblical principles. Most people accepted the Bible to be true. Again, does that mean everyone had a personal relationship with Jesus Christ? No. Did everyone believe in God? No. Of course not. But there was an overall acceptance that there is a God, and the Bible's true, right? There were those that was general in our nation as a whole at one time, and you just have to look at the Declaration of Independence to realize that, and our Constitution and all of that. It all invokes the name of God. It all invokes principles found in Scripture, for sure, right? So, and so then he makes the statement, and I guess the biggest issue I have with what he said is he said that there are those who believe that the government should pass laws that only benefit Christians. And I'm like, really? I have never heard that before, ever. And maybe there are people that say that. But I'm like, no, I believe in what God says government is there for. Government is there to enforce the laws, and the government is there to enforce, honestly, morality, it is, and to punish those who are doing evil, right? I mean, that is the point of government, and to protect, right, our nation. So, I think, as he's making his argument, I see a classic straw man strategy, I do. I think he's kind of building it with his story one, and then he goes on to story two. That's what I see. Do I agree with a lot of things? I mean, smart guy, and I agree with a lot of things, but I think because when I go and look at what everyone else is saying, Christian nationalism, I don't see where he's going with it. So most of the sources, when you Google it, when you go on YouTube, most of the sources opposing Christian nationalism are liberal and support CRT. Just about all. You, like, biggest one, like, the first thing you do when you Google it or you look on YouTube, CNN comes up, CNBC, right? All the big, huge liberal media. And so when they have headlines of the threat of Christian nationalism, or white, they always like to put white on the front of it. When I hear them saying this is a threat and all of this, then I'm like, what's really going on, right? Why is it that they have to brand people with this label? What is it that they're afraid of? What is it that's... Because I don't trust them at all, period. They're a bunch of liars. And so it kind of always perks my curiosity. And so certainly then there is, I think, and I haven't... But you know, again, I don't listen to the news, and I don't listen to a lot of different stuff. But certainly, there is an element within our nation that is fed up, right, with everything that's been going on, to the point of violence, right, to the point of wanting to take up arms, wanting to restore order and get things back to right. We have a constitution, and our government's supposed to operate by this, and it's not, right? It's not. I mean, the powers the president have, the powers that the Supreme Court has were never, right, they were never intended to have. And so there's a lot there that you're like, okay, yeah, I can understand where they're going with that. And so I do ask this question, when is violence necessary? And have you ever thought about that? Is it necessary? And I would, right, if it wasn't, then we would never have a nation, right? Yeah. Yeah. You always have to kind of go back to that, where we are founded in the midst of war, so, and violence. Rebellion. So is there a point?
Should be.
It should be, but what is that point? I mean, when is it that... Right, he cleansed the temple. And he's coming again in violence. Yeah.
You kind of talked about it a couple of weeks ago in service where you said it's not our purpose to rescue America.
Yeah.
Our purpose is to hold fast to Christ. And he is our hope, not America.
Okay. Yeah, as Christians, right? That is our purpose, is to serve Christ. And to me, looking at everything, I'm like, what would be the point? Right? What would be the point? What are we rescuing? I mean, we've already jumped off the cliff. We've already accepted that there is no God. So how is it that we would have to go back to this thought as a people that there is a God and the Bible's true, and I don't see us being able to do that right now. Period. I mean, I don't think any amount of violence or war would actually get us to that point. But as a patriot, not as a Christian, but as a patriot, as a citizen of the United States of America, there are certain people, I mean, the military, you know, if you enter the military, you swear an oath, I will protect the Constitution. At what point do you stand up and say the Constitution has been violated and I'm going to take up arms to defend it? I mean, what point do you do that?
It should have already been done.
Right? And honestly, if we're honest, the Constitution was probably violated on day one of the founding of the nation. So it kind of is an argument. It's like, I don't know at what point. Because there's been, I mean, when you look at history and you look at some of the Supreme Court decisions that have gone on, even in the early 1800s, some of them were pretty bad. And when you look back in some of the politics that has gone on, it's been really immoral. I mean, and terrible. And I mean, we complain about elections being rigged, and I have no doubt that it probably was rigged last time. I mean, but whatever. That's nothing new. That's not new at all. I mean, that's been going on for a long time. I mean, you read some of those elections, and it's like, oh my goodness. People being in prison, people being, I mean, just all kinds of stuff happening to keep people from voting, to take people's votes away, to get these people to be able to vote when they shouldn't be able to vote. Right? That's been going on for a long time. So I think it is a... I ask this question because there's a bunch of people out there, and they've been labeled white Christian nationalists, along with all the rest of us, that are kind of at that point of, man, I mean, what do we do here? Where do we go? And are kind of fed up. And many of them are not Christian. I wouldn't, they'd probably give them that label, but I'm not sure that they are. Maybe they are. But what are the issues with a civil war?
Death.
Death, right? Yeah.
You're going to get a large, you're going to get a number of people fighting on one side or the other just to fight, and they, not necessarily what they believe in, but
what, you personally, what would that look like?
It'd take me away from my family. I'd have to sacrifice a lot.
But the civil war is right at your doorstep, right? I mean, when you start thinking, so like, especially in our day and age right now, it's not north and south. It's not east west. It's neighbor. Within, it's neighbor against neighbor. It's Rwanda.
Like, it's like cancer. It's everywhere.
Right. Like, well, so Rwanda has the Hutus and the Tutsis.
Yeah.
And they're all the same tribe, exact same people group. But over the years, one people group kind of elevated. Or, you know, there was the upper echelon, and I can't remember which ones they were, and then there was the lower class. And on one day, the lower class decided we're going to kill everyone of the upper class. And they did. And it was their neighbors. Everyone did it. On one given day, they all decided to do the same thing. And the signal was given, and they went out and they killed everybody. And it was a bloodbath. And it was terrible. It was genocide. So that's what it would look like, right? If we had a civil war, it would look like that. And so it wouldn't be a, you know, like we have the war in the Ukraine that's going on. There's a definite line of where the battle's taking place. There's a definite place where the Russians are and the Ukrainians are, and they're firing bombs and missiles back at each other. But right there, it's kind of more your traditional war, but a civil war, yeah, it would be a disaster. I mean, it would destroy everything. Really, it would. I don't think it's an answer, but I understand that there's people fed up, and right, and I can't blame them for wanting to take action and wanting to do something. So I have another video here, and this guy's going to talk along the same lines, but from a completely different angle, and this is from about a year ago, so, yeah.
This is Richard Radio with Talk Freedom.
If you're a Christian and if you love your country, uh-oh. You're a Christian nationalist. This is Wretched Radio. These two words that are being bandied about lately sure seem to have been taking on a flavor that doesn't taste very good if you happen to be a Christian. It is a broadly defined term. It is everything from the people in the KKK, white supremacists, all the way to... You know, it's kind of nice when we said a Pledge of Allegiance and sang America the Beautiful. Congratulations. If you are anywhere in that spectrum, you're a Christian nationalist. And that means you're dangerous, you're delusional, and you are an enemy of the state. Bill Maher, I think in his monologue, he represents exactly what is happening in our culture, probably started in academia, with the shifting in attitude toward Christians and the moniker. Monikers are very important. The moniker that seems to be catching on is Christian nationalist. That it is automatically deemed to be a bad thing. Now, here's where it gets a little bit tricky for us. Today is today. Tomorrow, the definition might be a little different. Yesterday, it was different than today. Are you somebody who loves the country and is a Christian? You need to be aware that you can be branded, and I mean branded, a Christian nationalist, and that means you're delusional and dangerous. You will soon be an enemy of the state. Which means that if this is the definition that we stick with in this culture, it means you might want to be very mindful about how you speak about these issues. You might, at least at this moment, want to consider whether or not you allow yourself to be identified as a Christian nationalist. There's a reason that monikers are important. You are able to broad brush a huge group of people, label them negatively, and therefore brand them all as dangerous. That's how you get rid of a dissenting opinion. And by the way, that is what liberalism, specifically socialism and Marxism, always does. You will not find an instance of this in any civilization ever. They must identify particular people groups in order to silence their opposition. And so freedom of the press goes away, freedom of religion goes away, freedom of speech goes away. And how do you do that? You brand them as dangerous. You see, coming out of philosophies, and it's not just Marxism, you can go back to Rousseau and to Locke and to Hobbes, who would say that the autonomous self surrenders some of its liberties for safeties. And we give the right to do that to the state. It's known as statism. The state protects us. The state keeps us safe at all costs. And so when the state has a certain set of values that they want to have protected and defended, they are willing to brand and label people who are dissenters. And historically, those people are silenced. In varying forms, they are silenced. That has happened in every single nation that veers towards socialism or Marxism or really just liberalism, far-left liberalism. It's the playbook. And my fear is that is what we are hearing today, courtesy of Bill Maher, talking about the mass delusion of America known as Christianity, specifically evangelical religion. And he is using the events of January 6th to say all of those people there, they were all evangelical. Look, the details are irrelevant. Because right now you might be saying, well, wait a second, there were people from Antifa. Doesn't matter. Hey, there were people there from Black Lives Matter. Most of the people were peaceful. Doesn't matter. It does not matter. What matters in the social narrative is how you get branded and labeled. I'm not saying you don't try to present the truth. What I am suggesting is, and truth aside, you, as an evangelical Christian, are the same people who went into the Capitol and wreaked havoc. That's you. And you're now a Christian nationalist. And so if you aren't mindful of this, you might, in conversations, be saying things that are completely innocuous, but people hear it and go, ah, you are a Christian nationalist. Therefore, you're dangerous. That's what Bill Maher thinks.
By Oscar Schindler. But space lasers from Jews? Please, magical religious thinking is a virus, and QAnon is just its current mutation.
This, by the way, is his treatment of the Book of Revelation. It's wacky, it's zany, and you and I are now a part of QAnon too. Whether you believe in any conspiracy theory or not, you're a part of QAnon. Listen to the way you are being described.
That's why megachurches play QAnon videos. It's the same basic plot. Q is a prophet, Trump is the Messiah, there's an apocalyptic event looming, the storm, there's a titanic struggle of good versus evil, and if you want good to win, just keep those checks coming in.
By the way,
That is actually an accurate analysis of every worldview. It does have a creation story, it has a fall story, it has a redemption story, it has a judgment story, and it has a paradise story. All of them, including socialism and Marxism, social justice theory, you name it. So his observation is accurate in that it is the framework for every single worldview, but he's applying it to evangelical Christians. Who else has mega churches?
We need to stop pretending there's no way we'll ever understand why the Trump mob believes in him. It's because they're religious.
Boom! That's you. No, that's not where I fit! That's not where I fit! You fit there if that's where you're being fitted.
They've already made space in their heads for that doesn't make sense.
He's talking about evangelical Christianity. We're the delusional ones.
When you're a QAnon fanatic, you're also a fundamentalist Christian. They just go together like macaroni and cheese or Chardonnay and Valium. Just me? Okay.
Perhaps. But that broad brush approach, like it or not, that's you, evangelical. You believe in every QAnon theory. You would like to burn down the Capitol. You're fine with the Capitol being rushed and mobbed. You're fine with all of that because you're being labeled a Christian nationalist.
That insurrection looked like a revival meeting with people praying around wooden crosses, waving the Christian flag and Jesus saves signs, yelling, Jesus is my savior, Trump is my president. A Jesus 2020 banner hung near the gallows that was erected for Mike Pence.
I know what you're thinking. I didn't do that. Well, you did, because now you're getting branded as a part of the gang. Be mindful of this. It might mean that rather than sitting passively and being labeled a Christian nationalist, you might have to gulp a little bit and say, no, I'm not that. Now, the two words maybe work fine in your mind, but in the mind of Bill Maher and his accolades, it is a pejorative. No, it's worse than that. It is the worst of the worst. It is total delusion, and it's dangerous.
Because I guess he's Judas in this version of the story, which makes this guy Pontius Pilate? It's not a coincidence that every senator who objected to certifying the electoral vote in Arizona is an evangelical Christian.
There it is.
When Ted Cruz defended his vote to overturn a legitimate election, he said, recent polling shows that 39% of Americans believe the election that just occurred was rigged. You may not agree with that assessment, but it is nevertheless a reality for nearly half the country. In other words, we have no proof the election was stolen. And you may have verifiable evidence that it wasn't, but that doesn't matter. It only matters that we believe it.
That's just staggering. Because, by the way, that is exactly what critical theory is. If you believe it, it is true. But for Bill Maher, I don't think he's necessarily a fan of critical theory, but nevertheless, he's turning the tables completely here. You can't believe it and make it so, even though the people that he's most likely to drink Chardonnay and take a Valium with, believe that if you believe it, then it is so, nevertheless.
And that's when you're at religion. That you have to respect something just because people believe it. Does that include professional wrestling?
By the way, where's he going with this?
The Founding Fathers were pretty adamant about building a nation based on reason instead of faith. Thomas Paine wrote a whole book about it, The Age of Reason, and it was a big hit. It was the white fragility of 1794. So respectfully, I direct you to your own t-shirt. Your feelings.
Well, I guess we know where we're going. What's the next step? That you can't believe in God publicly? Bleep your feelings. We'll find out. Because Bill's not done. I don't think the words have the Christian nationalist logo has been fully fleshed out yet, but it's definitely worth watching, and you should be aware of it. And if nothing else, we should be learning the lesson. You speak about moral, social, and political issues, and if you are known as a Christian or you bring Christ into it, you are branded a Christian nationalist. And these days, that ain't good. This is Wretched Radio. Todd, I'm going to be your Uber driver. What's your destination?
2054 Temple Run.
No. Your eternal destination. The liberals, they brought in Pelagianism. It's the old Sabellian heresy, denying the Trinitarian Godhead. Three persons, one God. Not to the Sabellian. No. They would say that it's actually one God.
Sorry, I left that last part on there because I thought it was pretty funny. So I think that's kind of a better explanation of where the whole Christian nationalist white, well, they've added white onto it now, white Christian nationalists. And certainly it's an attempt, like he was talking about, to brand people from all kinds that oppose. So what do we do with that? So a couple verses I want to look at. Look at Matthew chapter 5. Nothing earth-shattering here, but just a good reminder. Somebody want to read Matthew 5, 43 through 45? All right, thanks, Bob.
You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous.
Okay. So how are we supposed to treat our enemy?
Love.
Love, right? Which is, to me, I think it's a reminder. Because it's easy to get agitated. It's easy to get angry. And we do have people who are our enemy. They hate us, right? And they certainly want to silence our voice. They certainly want to say those people are dangerous and should not be listened to. And in a sense, they're probably right. We are dangerous. The message of the gospel is dangerous. Especially to those who have placed their faith in Satan, certainly those who have desired to have control, right? The gospel promises freedom, and they don't want people to be free. So we're reminded here, right? Love, right? That is as we move through this world and the things that are going on, we're reminded to hate those, or to love those, love those that hate us, and hate your, you know, you're not supposed to hate your enemy, you're supposed to love your enemy. So then Philippians chapter 2 as well. Okay, thank you, Matt.
Do all things without grumbling or disputing, that you may be blameless and innocent, children of God without blemish, in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast to the word of life, so that in the day of Christ I may be proud that I did not run in vain or labor in vain.
Okay. So he uses this word crooked and perverse generation. You could also use the word nation there. Crooked and perverse nation. And so, how are we supposed to act?
Without complaining.
Without complaining, okay. Are we supposed to hide in our bunkers?
No.
No, right? We're supposed to shine as light and continue to speak the truth. So there are a lot of attempts to silence Christianity. There's or the truth. Again, I know I use that word Christian way too much, and I shouldn't. But the truth, right? God's word. There's certainly a lot of attempts to try to silence anyone who would promote it, proclaim it, but we are lights in this world, holding fast the word of life, and Paul says, so that I might rejoice. So what's the cost?
Could be different for everybody.
Okay.
Could be in life.
What's that?
Yourself.
Yourself? For sure. Yeah. Okay. Your life. Your reputation. Your family. Your children. Your parents. Hey, it can cost. Right? Standing for what is right can cost a lot. It can. And as we continue to see evil and wickedness grow, and I think we are seeing that grow, here's what we're asked to do, to continue on, to persevere in Christ. And we have a great hope. And I'm always reminded, our hope is not in this life, our hope is in the next. And that's what we're striving for. So, I hate the stuff that's going up. Yes, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
And that's a huge point.
Right, we desire to live peaceable lives, yeah. For sure. We're not looking for conflict. Mm-hmm. But to be a Christian is to cause conflict.
Yes, but yeah. I think that we forget how effective prayer can be in the circumstances that we're in right now.
For sure.
I think that probably those that left to England and all that, there's probably a lot of prayer involved.
They were seeking peace, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think prayer is a huge part of where we're at, too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. All right, on that thought, I like it. We can go to prayer, right?